and we all went to it, really can only supplement and reinforce what y'all teach your kids at home, you know. So I like to focus on the adults so I can increase your knowledge or reinforce what you already know. And this little thing that I do, I call points well made, because I like to connect the dots so that, you know, life, church will make more sense for you, and therefore life will make more sense for you. So, you know, in our church, we don't really have classes of people. We don't like to, you know, do that. But let's just think a category of people who, like the priests and the choir, great job, and the singers and the readers and the chanters, who actually look at the texts of the prayers and the hymns, and actually it comes out of their mouth. They have like a direct experience, you know, and pray of the prayers, you know, because they actually know what it says, Greek or English. I assume you all know Greek, because there was quite a bit of Greek here, so, you know, whatever, and, you know, so it's comprehensible. There's a second class of people, and those are the people who actually hear it. They're not actually saying it or reading it, so their experience is sort of secondary, but it's a good one. I mean, you know, if you got to be here. You are all here. You got to actually be present, you know, to hear it. But so there's that second class, and then there's that kind of another class of people who they're not present when, you know, the prayers or the hymns are uttered, or, you know, so they don't actually hear it. And so they get explanations of them, whether it's in a class or a sermon, and that's kind of like an echo, you know. And then, so Weber, I want to add to your knowledge, so that whichever class you're in of those, you can, you know, it will enrich you. So if you would take your bulletin and open to the actual middle, and where it says Sunday of the Samaritan Woman over here, every week, I would assume that every week, these are the hymns that are sung by the choir during the Divine Liturgy at a certain time prior to the Gospel reading. So if you wanted to be in that first tier of people, you'd have to be in the choir to sing it. You know, or if you wanted to be in that second tier of people, you'd have to be in church. Whatever. So you can always count on the fact the first hymn is always going to be like the main one, and it's going to have the principal message of the day. And in this period, we're in the Pascha, the Easter period, so it's always going to be Christos Anesti up here. But if you look at the next one down where it says Resurrection Apolitikion. Can you say that? Apolitikion? Apolitikion. It's a term that we use in church. It means a kind of a hymn. We should know, you know, we know terms for all kinds of things. We know terms for basketball and hockey and football. We should know the terms for our church, right? We're here all the time. So that Resurrection Apolitikion on Sundays will change. There's eight of them. And typically that you can look at that and it'll remind you of the things that we've learned from the Bible and from our classes. You know, and it can be something you can talk about, you know, at the table. So keep your eye on that from week to week. Now I want to talk about Christos Anesti, that Christ is risen today. And just to connect a few dots, you probably already know this. So it says, Christ is risen from the dead. So also keep in mind the icon of Easter, of the resurrection outside, the one where it's Christ in the middle in white, and he's grabbing Adam and Eve, and he's got his feet trampling on the gates of something. Okay? So that's what happened below the earth. I want you to imagine like Holy Week and Easter, and there's a camera view that's showing what's happening above, and you've got the crucifixion, and you've got the Virgin Mary crying, and you've got the apostles, and then you've got, you know, Nicodemus and Joseph burying Jesus, and he's putting it on the tomb, and then you've got the camera where it goes below the ground. Mel Gibson is making a sequel to the Passion of the Christ, and I understand it's going to talk about these things, but anyway, just, that would be cool to see. But just imagine now the camera going below. Something happened below, and that's what Christos Anesti and some of the other hymns will talk about. So things to keep in mind when it says dead, Christ is risen from the dead, Christos Anesti ek nekron, the word dead here can refer to dead people, but it also can refer to the place. So back to the icon. That icon is a depiction that's used in art throughout the Western world, and that depiction is called the harrowing of hell. In other words, when Christians believe that Christ, his soul, went into hell, blasted it open, raised the souls of the dead. Okay, the harrowing of hell. So hell, Germanic, etymology, is the word that means the underworld, the place of the dead. Of course, in some context, it can mean eternal punishment or something bad when we say go to hell. We don't want to say that, but, we can mean hell to mean something specific. But in this case, in ecclesiastical language, hell simply means the underworld. Now, there's a Greek word for that, Hades, Hades, okay? But even the Greek word needs to be defined specifically because Hades was something that, the ancients had, and it had a particular meaning, and it was a god of the underworld, and then it was a certain kind of underworld. So when we use Greek words or Germanic words or English words, the church gives them specific meaning to say we're referring to this reality. So whether we say Hades or hell or the dead, what we're meaning is the netherworld, where the souls went, all souls went after they died, before the resurrection. Okay, so when it says Christ is risen from the dead, it's simply a historical fact. And you can count on these hymns that are here to not be super mystical, okay? They usually describing things that were done in the Bible or actual events. If there's something mystical to be said, like the choir said, we who mystically represent the cherubim, okay, that you kind of have to think metaphorically, we are mystically doing something. The hymnographers were pretty clear. When they wanted to say something mystical or metaphorical, they insert a word that gives you this thing, or it's obvious, calling the Virgin Mary some kind of animal or something. I mean, obviously that's, a metaphor, but oftentimes, there'll be a word that signals there is a metaphor. These hymns, however, are not. So what is the actual history that happened? Christ was crucified. He died. He was taken off the cross. Joseph and Nicodemus put him in the tomb. They sealed the tomb. The Jews had the tomb sealed. The myrrh bearers, were going back and forth and all that business. So that happened. That's what it's saying. Not in this hymn, but I mean in other hymns. Now, so Christ is risen. Risen means he actually came back to life, okay? Resurrection means resuscitation. I knew a lady in Charlotte who went to church all the time. Maybe it's because she was from New York and didn't go to Sunday school. I don't know. But she did not realize until a few years ago that Christ actually physically rose from the dead. She just thought it was a spiritual sort of thing. So, yes, Christ's soul left his body. His body stayed in the tomb. His soul went down into the dead, Hades, the netherworld, hell, where the souls were, where the devil kind of had some kind of kingdom down there. And he blasted it open. That's what you see in the icon with these. Broke down the gates, probably plastered the wall with some phosphorus thing, divine light, so that there's a mark there forever that he was there, and nobody can go there and not know anymore that he wasn't there, And after he did what he did, then his soul, whatever, came back into his body, and now with all the glory, he was alive again, and he rose. So he rose from the dead. He came back to life from the netherworld into his body, and then out of the tomb. So now it says here, by death trampling down upon death. Okay, he died, he went down, and he trampled on death. Not only we still die. So when he says he trampled on death, that's a whole other discussion of what he actually accomplished at that time, what that meant. But in any case, he won. And to those in the tombs, he granted life. We've read the Bible, right? Doesn't it say that after his soul left his body, he expired, he died on the cross, and then at that point his soul went down into hell and was starting to do whatever he did. And it says, and there was an earthquake, and the tombs were opened, and bodies of people came out and started walking, and were going into the city of Jerusalem and appearing to people as a kind of a witness to the actual what had happened and was going on. So while we can extrapolate on this and talk about our resurrection, you know, the resurrection of all the people that die, Christians, and, you know, eternal life, it's actually referring to the historical things, okay? And now you can read those hymns from week to week and be reminded, you know, of the historical events, whether it's the Ascension that's coming up, or even the Holy Trinity here, the hymn to the Holy Trinity, which is our hymn here. It says, "Blessed are you, Christ our God, send down the Holy Spirit and made the fishermen wise," etc., etc. Those were events. They're in the Bible. They talk about it. They happen. So that's how to understand. That's how to understand these hymns. Now, just a few minutes since I'm on words. We talked about death meaning hell, Hades, underworld. How about the word Easter? I don't know if you have any trouble using the word Easter. I don't have any trouble using the word Easter. But as it happens, it's only like German and English of European languages that have a different word for Easter other than Pascha. Pascha being the Hebrew word for Passover, and then the Greek turns it into Pascha, meaning whatever, Passover. Although there is a Greek word for Passover, diavasis, means passing over. And then, so the English word, interestingly, the root of the word Easter, you can think East, you can go back, it's, you know, some people say, oh, related to the name of some goddess or whatever, but it also related to a word that means dawn, bright, and spring. All right, who knows sort of like the secondary term for Easter in Greek? We call it lambri, right? All right, lambri, lambro means bright, okay? Easter comes from a word that means, that goes back to meaning bright also. So in a sense, it's almost like the same word. And the hymns that the church singers here, the chanters sang earlier, one of the hymns, Anastasio Simera Lambrithomen o Lai Pascha Kiriu Pascha, it basically has all the terms for Easter in it. It says, resurrection day, O peoples, you know, let us brilliantly shine. There's your Easter, there's your shining, your lambri, right? Pascha, Kiriu Pascha. And then it says, Christ our God has passed us over from death into life and from earth to heaven. So it's got all the words in there. Resurrection, Pascha, passed over, you know. And that's why, just to encourage you, you know, to spend time, you know, loving God in the worship that we have, and all these cool things are being said and chanted as reminders in a building. And then you can then tell your kids or be a glowing example for your kids, because that's just kind of how it works. That's all. God bless. Christos, and this.